We are welcoming you to the Watchers of the Skies program. We're at Ashland University here in the studios of AUTV20 in the Journalism and Digital Media Department at Ashland University. We are joined by my colleague, Dennis Montecruzos.
Morning.
Morning. Welcome. Glad you're here. We also have some fine students in the studio. We've got Caden right here on camera, Stephen back there running stuff. Jesse's here. Micah's running the show, and Logan as well. So we welcome you here to Ashland University. We are placed right between Cleveland and Columbus. If you've not been to campus, we'd like to remedy that. So come and visit us and see for yourself that we are the world headquarters for nice people. that's what's on the billboards. And so we've got to live up to that, Dennis, every day. On this program, what we try to do is look at contemporary issues that affect higher education, and we use an Ashland University lens. Dennis, I think one of the things I want to talk to you about later is this whole idea of a lens. With Dennis and I have talked offline about this. We talk about rose-colored glasses and how do we see the world. Well, we're trying to use Ashland University as an ethos, to see the world through that ethos, and not an easy thing to do because we've tried to make this more of a framework and not something that's so specific as a microscope, you know, something like that. We don't want to be accused of myopia, but kaleidoscopic. I'm making up words.
Kaleidoscopicity?
I don't know. But today we're taking on a tough topic. These are not the topics that college presidents like to cover, and we're talking about the cost of sports in higher education. So this whole idea of, you know, what are we paying to have athletics on campus? What does it bring to campus? Is it worth it? You know, we're asking these kinds of questions because we promise that there's really nothing off limits on our show. We want to be able to take on tough topics and say, here's a tough one. Is it worth it? What is it all about? What about the regulating bodies? You know, the NCAA regulates athletics on college campuses. Title IX is another important issue on college campuses. But I am going to quiz my co-host today and see if you know some answers. We did not prepare, obviously, for this. So let me ask you, which college or university in America has the largest athletics budget?
Well, I think that we don't actually know, in part because I think only public schools report this, right?
Yeah, that's a good point. I know that we have better access to public schools reporting, and when I look at this list, you're absolutely right. All of the top 10 are public, so I think even when you'd have to dig anyhow to find out where privates are, that's for sure.
Okay.
So we'll say, so top publics, that's
all right.
Good clarification.
So I'll cheat and offer maybe two.
Okay.
So I suspect Michigan is going to be way up there. And I want to say maybe one of the California schools like USC or UCLA.
But all right.
Those would be my guess. And maybe Alabama, but okay, Alabama's not really. I'll say the other ones.
Now you realize, Dennis, the state we're in.
Yes.
All right.
So you're going to say it's Ohio State University, of course.
It's not Ohio State, but for you to mention Michigan and not bring up Ohio State, you know, we have students here that might ban you from the studio if you ever do that again.
Well, but I'm so proud of Ashland University that Ohio State?
What? No. How about Texas? So Texas is number one. That actually surprised me when I read that. Now I'm going to ask you to guess again. What do you think their annual budget is? And again, here's their total revenue, right? So not their expenditures, but their total revenue. And this is in 2018-19. You want to take a shot at that?
Let's say $300 million.
Wow, that's not too bad. So $223 million was their total revenue. Just take a pause there for a moment. Is that striking? $223 million. Their expenses are $204 million. And, you know, we're really good on, Michigan was number four. So I'm looking to see which California school would be the top one. I'm having to drill down a little bit. So certainly not in the top 10. And UCLA looks like it's up there at $108 million. So, you know, almost half there. Ohio State, actually more than Michigan. Michigan's at, or they were at 197 with a revenue of 190. Ohio State at 210 revenue and expenses, $220 million.
Wow.
So it sounds like they're underwriting athletics. That's not true, though, right? So you know that Ohio State is probably not underwriting athletics. They more than make up for what seems like a deficit. And this is really where the debate begins, right? So the question is it worth it, right? Let's just say that that $10 million is a deficit. You know, where does Ohio State make up those dollars? Well, as a university president, I can tell you that one of the things is it brings in donors, boosters, right. friends of the university, right? So that's not an easy thing to quantify. It's not as though Ohio State's going to publish, you know, here are the 5 or 10 donors who gave X amount of money because of the football program. And, you know, this is a tough one because we're an academics first institution here at Ashland. But if you look at the pattern for donors over the last 10 to 15 years, it follows suit with all of the schools I've mentioned. You know, lots of those schools, and Ashland as well, get donors who are interested in academic affairs, but there's something about athletics and connecting with those students and with the excitement that it brings to a campus that says, yes, I will invest in a new stadium or field house or whatever it happens to be. But that's only one part of the puzzle. So this whole idea is it worth it? You know, we recruit a lot of students. At Ashland University currently, Dennis, I want to tell you that this fall, I want to say that we have about 710 athletes on our campus. Hmm. And, you know, when you think about with, you know, COVID, our numbers are down a little bit, but, you know, maybe 1,700 students overall, 700 of them are athletes. You know, we might be a little bit closer to 1,900. So it gives you a sense of the important role that athletics plays. You know, some of those are walk-ons, some of those are scholarship athletes. We have a large athletics budget. I'm trying to think how many years ago, Mark Emmert, the president of the NC2A, he estimated how many schools actually make money, and these are all schools, make money at athletics. You want to take a guess at that number?
Well, but this is in the first sense, not in the
That's right.
backdoor sense.
Not in the backdoor sense, and not even in the student recruitment sense, right? So if a student comes here to play basketball, you know, maybe that student was coming here to study chemistry
right.
or pre-med, right? And so yes, just in the raw sense of revenue that is directly attributed to athletics, what's your sense of Mr. Emmert's guess of how many make money?
20%.
Yeah, great guess. I mean, actually, it's less than 20 colleges or universities.
Oh, wow.
So I think he said 14. I'm almost sure that's right. Mark, I'm sorry if I got that wrong, but I'm almost sure that's right. So rather stunning, isn't it, that less than 15 colleges, you know, thousands of schools have athletic programs.
Right.
And when you think of these budgets, you know, just to give you a for instance, my understanding is that, you know, just March Madness, if you just take in March Madness, the revenue there to the NC2A is around $1 billion. I mean, it's
right.
an extraordinary sum. And so, you know, it brings up this age-old question, Dennis, and that is this idea of amateurism and professionalism and that role. You know, do athletes come to college campuses to get an education, or are they really coming as a stepping stone to their careers in, you know, professional sports? And should we, quote-unquote, tolerate that as educational institutions? I know 1939 is a big year for me. I keep going back to it, but I believe that was the year where the University of Chicago's president said, I'm not pleased with the professionalism that's happened on our campus, the pay for, you know, these coaches. I think in 27 states, the highest paid person, state employee
right.
in that state is a college football coach. In another 15 states, it's a college basketball coach. So, you know, I recently read that Alabama's strength coach makes $500,000 a year. So just to give you a sense of these salaries. So what about it, Dennis? I mean, I don't know if you have a sense of that on our campus, but just speaking more generally, has it become too professionalized? Has the word amateur now become passé? And should we think of another model for higher education?
Well, I mean, I suppose it's going to depend on the college. So,
sure.
I mean, again, the schools that are always in the running for the, let's say, the BCS playoff championship or for the NCAA, I mean, in those cases, I mean, it very clearly is a case where many of those students are aspiring to professional careers. But I don't know if you have a handy stat there for how many athletes really have some realistic chance, I mean, and believe it themselves going in.
Right.
To become professionals,
right.
whether at the highest leagues or in a European league or a kind of a second tier league. I mean, I assume, of course, the vast majority don't really believe it. They just enjoy the sports and want to participate. So it's maybe it's a problem for a certain
right.
realm. I mean, there was the recent decision where athletes can now make money off of their own names
yes.
as college athletes.
At NIL, name, image, and likeness.
Right, mm-hmm. right. But again, how many athletes are really going to be able to cash in on that
right.
in a meaningful way?
Someone just
way.
Signed $1 million contract?
I can believe it.
Someone just signed a million dollar contract along those lines. But It's an excellent point. And yes, I've got that handy stat for you, Dennis, because I recently looked at a stat, and particularly around Division II. So Ashland University is a Division II school. And let's just talk about Division II athletes. Division II athletes, 75% of them believe that they will have a professional career. 75%.
Really?
Yes. So what are the actual statistics? What do you think the actual statistics are? Division II athletes that have any kind, you talked about it, right? Any kind of professional career, not just, you know, in the NBA or NFL.
I'm inclined to say something like maybe 2% at most.
As a matter of fact, that's almost exactly right. So one to 2%.
Right.
So that's rather stunning, isn't it? Right, this vast abyss between expectations and reality. Yeah.
And so here I would say this would be a place where arguably university people have a responsibility to say, look, you know, we're happy to have you here and we're happy to give you an education and certainly you're getting a scholarship, but they really need to be given a heart-to-heart that, look, objectively, you know, if this happens, fantastic, we'll support you. Obviously, we're going to do our best to push you along in this respect, but this isn't reality. So, right. I mean, the next question for me would be, well, what are the graduation rates for this group, especially the 75% who think that they're the exception,
right,
that, you know, they're going to be not in the 73% that need something else, right?
Sure.
So what are university staff, faculty, the athletic departments themselves telling these students?
Right, and see here, Dennis, you're playing that gadfly role and asking the questions I explicitly told you not to
that's
ask.
Right.
But no, you're absolutely right. You know, this really does become the next question because that dichotomy does exist, and it's one of the things that the NCAA has really been urging colleges and universities to do, to talk to those students early on. And we try to do a really good job of that at Ashland, talk to students and try to temper their aspirations with the realities of professional life. As a matter of fact, I will tell you that Ashland University, I believe this is correct, we hold the distinction for the only Division II professional football player who relinquished his last year of eligibility, Adam Shaheen, went into pro sports. I'm happy to say Adam now has his degree, so he did stay with Ashland and got his degree. Adam is now playing, he was playing for the Chicago Bears, drafted by the Bears, he's now playing for the Miami Dolphins. He's the only Division II professional football player in history. So to have foregone his final year and made it and stayed on. So, you know, pretty amazing statistics. And Dennis, you're right. We are not proud of our graduation rates for our athletes in certain areas. I will say that football struggles the most. And I think it is one of those areas where you see a lot of students believe in themselves enough to say, I want to come to Ashland and I want to play. What we often find is it's really not so much about the fact that they can't handle the academic rigor, it's they want to play.
Right.
And the instant that they realize they're not going to get playing time, that's when we have a difficult time retaining them. So if you look perennially at Ashland and where we struggle to retain and then graduate students, it's students of color, generally men, and generally athletes. And so you're not surprised by that,
no,
right? So we all know that that's an area of focus, right, and our retention folks, you know, are working on that.
And in certain programs as well.
That's
so,
right.
I mean, I was at a previous institution where I would have athletes from some programs who were fantastic students,
right,
and athletes from other programs who generally struggled and often just didn't care.
Right.
I mean, more than once I had people in the athletic department who would kind of, you know, push me a little bit, mm-hmm, to see if I could give this student some sort of a break.
Yes.
So
never going to happen.
It didn't happen, but
right.
I mean, it was, and again, it was certain programs where it was clear these guys are there to become pros, or at least to try, and certainly to bring in revenue for the university, and others where they're legitimately student athletes.
Right.
Where they care about the degree, they care about academics, they try. Sometimes they're really good students, sometimes they're not, but in every case, they were really trying,
right,
in the courses.
Right.
Couple of programs,
not so much.
Much less so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And see, I think that's an important distinction, and that's where, as a university president, I have a hard time with that. I do, and I like to believe that would be true if I were at a public, which I've worked in public education, or a private. There are certain standards that you simply can't shift and change. I am really proud of the fact that at Ashland University, our average GPA of a student athlete is higher really? Than the average GPA in the populace at large, in the student body at large. That's incredibly reflective of our coaching staff, our athletic director, and others who've taken that upon themselves. And yes, you know, I actually love it because I see the teams compete. I want to say it was women's soccer. I should have had that right, because if I got that wrong, I'm going to hear from women's tennis or swimming or whomever had the title. But, you know, we're really parsing things out, because I mean, I'm talking like a 3.68 or a 3.65. So we had a number of teams in those categories. We're really proud of that. But you know, you're right, Dennis, this idea of expectations and setting those expectations early on and saying student athlete. So we say that emphasis at Ashland. You're always a student first. We're not going to compromise our academics because you happen to be an athlete. I know we were both embarrassed when at UNLV at the time. We were both at UNLV. I think we may have been working there, or perhaps were a student there at the time. But, you know, it made national news because a student misspelled his own name on an assignment. And so it became clear that he didn't complete the assignment, and someone had completed it for him. And so, you know, it's that sort of element. You know, and I think as I look at potential restructuring, and you may not know this, Dennis, but the NC2A is actually reframing their constitution even as we speak. They're kind of having an open session where they're asking folks. We had a session actually yesterday. I'm on a national committee. I'm privileged to serve in that fashion, where we have given them some feedback on these elements. And, you know, we really have some concerns about, you know, where this is headed, because, you know, if now the students have the right to their name, image, and likeness, which I support at some level. I think it does make sense. Is it far behind before we're starting to pay these athletes, you know? And will we see, you know, there's even some talk about the top power 5, 10, 20 teams maybe breaking away and forming their own alliance, you know, with contracts and, you know, all of these dollars involved. So I think you're going to see some significant restructuring in the NC2A. And I think there's a lot to be said for developing you know, some sort of league that is transparent about it and says, you know what, we believe that academics are important to this group, but not the most important thing. Mm-hmm. So these are athlete students.
Right.
Right? And so here's the threshold. We're going to change it because, boy, we're using all these metaphors, moving the goalposts, you know, or, you know, but you move the academic goalposts, and you almost have to. And, you know, I think that's one of the things that makes it very difficult. If you're going to sustain some sort of standard, you can't shift it for students for any reason, right? This idea that, well, we want you to succeed.
Now, this is an interesting idea. If you have this, and maybe it needs to be more than that, but it would be something along the lines where it would be schools where the athletes that get into these elite programs,
yes,
the football, the BCS football race, and the NCAA having a chance to win March Madness and so on. If it's set up in such a way where athletes with a realistic chance of making the pros know, if I get into these schools, I've got a real chance at a career. Mm-hmm. If I don't get into these schools, I better be a student first and an athlete second. So if that's something that could help that 75% number become much more realistic,
right,
that could actually be a good thing, at least from a utilitarian perspective,
that
it's really clear. So not everyone who goes to college should be dreaming that, I mean, you know, again, do your best. And if it turns out that you make it to the pros, fantastic. But that you should have a realistic sense going in, hey, if I can't get into this university or in this kind of quasi-league, I better, you know, at the very least hedge my bets, so to speak, in a serious way.
Well, it would be interesting. I think about the colleges and universities that populate, you know, the NBA and the NFL. You know, I think you see some segments where it's literally just, you know, 5 or 10 schools, you know, maybe produce 30-40% of the folks in those different areas. Wouldn't it be interesting if when you're recruiting an athlete, you'd say, here's the percentage of our athletes that made it professionally. So, you know, I don't know that that would help with recruitment perhaps.
Right.
But, you know, we'll see if that bifurcated sort of element happens or works, but you know, it's to be seen. I think that would be difficult. Well, I can't close out this segment without talking about Katie Najat. She's our pole vaulter who graduated in 2013 and literally just vaulted into the gold medal. And so she's our gold medalist. I know. And she'll be on campus. She's going to be here to be our commencement speaker in December. We're so proud of Katie. Mm-hmm. Trevor Bassett, I mean, literally one of the world's fastest men, right, still here at Ashland. We've already given a shout out to Adam Shaheen. We're so proud of the athletes who go on, and many others, of course, play in European leagues and elsewhere. We have 24 sports here at Ashland. We have 47 esports athletes. We were one of the pioneers in that, women's lacrosse, men's and women's tennis. Lots more to talk about. We think it's worth it at Ashland. We put academics first. But it's a difficult question, and we're grateful that you've joined us for this session of the Watchers of the Skies. As we talked about athletics, is it worth the cost? It's expensive. We think it adds discipline to our campus. We know it adds excitement. We know the student body enjoys being part of our campus. And we hope you've enjoyed this session with us as the Watchers of the Skies from AUTV20 at Ashland University. Thanks to all of our friends here in the Journalism and Digital Media Department. We look forward to having you join us next time on the Watchers of the Skies.